Good evening and welcome back to our series on the laws of life. I believe this is number 10, if I haven't lost count. And our question tonight is, what is the law of expansive response and how can aspirants best harness it? Now, you may not be familiar with the concept of expansive response. It kind of, I think, the problem in this country today of obesity indicates expansive response. But, and so maybe Michelle is in error trying to eliminate it. But that's not exactly what expansive response refers to. It refers to the mind and our capacity to grow. This is the heart of the impulse to grow. And it's also the preeminent law of thinking. It describes the thinking process. This is really a session on the law of law. It describes how divine laws work in general and the meaning of all these laws that we've been working with and will continue to work with. So the law of expansive response and how aspirants can harness it. The fact that you're all listening at either live or by podcast is itself an expansive response. Those people who aren't listening or taking the series are practicing imploding response. They're not expanding. Their minds are shrinking. And therefore, they ought to sign up and take this series for the best interest of their minds. But that's the idea of expansive response. As our mental capacity grows, we're able to make a stronger and stronger affirmative response to the laws of life. So this is the heart of the whole series that we're doing here. Okay, with that in mind, let me describe this spread. I've already shuffled the cards and laid them out, and we have in the starting point, the Page of Rods, upside down. In the counterpoint, the King of Cups, upside down. The challenge is the Six of Rods, right side up. The purpose is the Star, right side up, and that's number 17, which equals an 8 in the Major Arcana. There's another Major Arcana in the Endowment, that's the Hanged Man, upside down, which looks right side up. And that's number 12, or a 3. And then on the other side of things, there's the Destiny, and we have the Eight of Rods upside down. In the Pillar of Revelation, the real question, we have the Four of Pentacles upside down. We have the Two of Rods right side up as the Unseen Forces. We have the Hierophant as the Spiritual Ideal, number 5 in the Major Arcana. And we have another 5, the Five of Pentacles, in the position of fulfillment upside down. So we have 4 upright cards, 6 reverse cards. We have 3 majors being the Star, the Hangman, and the Hierophant. We have no swords, 0 swords, 4 rods, 1 cup, and 2 pentacles. So this is definitely dominated by rods, which makes sense, because it's the preeminent law of thinking. This describes how thinking is designed to fulfill the laws of life. So we also have the 2 fives in the 9th and 10th position, and we have 2 eights, the Star and the Destiny, the 8 of Rods. This is as I indicated, really the process of living lawfully and what all these divine laws mean to us. And really a good place to kick it off is with the spiritual ideal, the Hierophant. And this, the Hierophant, of course, is a Chinese-looking fellow wearing a pagoda. And he's got his right hand raised in a blessing. And there are 2 keys down in the lower right-hand corner. And, of course, the keys are what count here. This law is the key to divine wisdom and understanding the laws of divine creation. And so the big question here is, are we lawful or are we lawless? The vast majority of human beings are lawless. First of all, there's the idea that if you don't like a law, just pray for a miraculous deliverance from it. And God will grant you an exemption and everything will be fine. Of course, that never happens. God has no motivation to suspend the laws of life. His motivation is to fulfill the laws of life, and we're the mechanism by which he does this here on earth. So going back to the starting point, we'll get to the Hierophant again, but going back to the starting point, we have the page of rods upside down. The page of rods is a young person, it would look like, with the brim of the hat down over the eyes, indicating turning inward, and the inner sight. This person is apparently coming out of the swamp, out of the marshy reeds, where the waters of the emotional plane mix with the soil of the physical plane. And so this is the mind leading us out of emotion and out of materialism towards something greater. It's the mind that can let us understand and interact with law. It's the mind that expands in its capacity to respond to divine law, hence the law of expansive response. It's the mind that grows or doesn't. And so the opposite or the inverse of the law of expansive response is, as I suggested, the law of imploding response or the law of collapsing activity. We can shrink down to nothingness and be as though we are treading water in quicksand, or we can climb out of the quicksand and find our way in the dry land of the mind. And in order to do this, we have to turn inward. That's the symbolism of the hat over the eyes. We have to develop the mind. We have to learn to use the mind to harness divine force. Now, notice the scarf here, which I've referred to many times in other cards, especially the page of cups, which is in the spread. The scarf indicates the expression of divine energy. The laws of God, the laws of creation, are not static rules like the laws we pass for ourselves. They're not even things like the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that. Those are static rules and cause tremendous confusion among people trying to understand them. Those are guidelines for behavior, but we have to understand that the actual law of creation, which is what we're examining through this whole series, the laws of creation are living forces in the mind of God. They're living forces of wisdom, of peace, of joy. Order is one of the great forces of divine law. It organizes matter. But it's not a set of laws. It's not a set of rules. It's a living, moving law that we have to train the mind to, first of all, admire, second of all, contemplate, third of all, hop onto like a freight train and ride with it and see where it's taking us. It's kind of like, for those of you who are Sandra Boynton fans, her song, The Dog Train. The dog train goes every night. Nobody ever sees it, but it's got thousands of dogs riding on it to who knows where.
With their heads out the window.
Yes, and they have their heads out of the window and their tongues out panting in the breeze, and they love it. And they've gone everywhere, but they're always safely back home by morning. This is what they do when we're asleep. Well, that's the dog train song. That's kind of what we have to do with these laws. we have to jump the dog train, well, the God train in this case, dog, God, back. And we have to jump onto these divine laws and follow them and then learn how to incorporate them into our life. So this scarf, this beige scarf that the Page of Rods is wearing, is this capacity not just to understand the law, not just to obey the law, but more importantly, to harness this law and all divine laws so that we can bring it down into the physical plane and transform life on earth, redeem life on earth. So that's our starting point. It's the mind that is key to understanding this law and all divine laws. Divine laws for the soul, divine laws for the... In fact, there are three basic kinds of law. There's the laws of nature, which the dogs all follow. There's the laws of the soul or solar laws, which are the soul follows. And then there's the laws of life, which God follows. And then beyond that, beyond the scope of our system, they're cosmic laws. All of these laws are based on greater cosmic laws. And as we learn to hop on the God train and follow these laws and understand them, obedience becomes automatic. And we're meant to harness them. And as we do that, we bring into our life this expansive response. In very real sense, the beauty of this law is that it's not just a law that God imposes on us, it's a law that requires us to respond. It doesn't work until we become responsive. And then it's through expansion, through growth. So we have our part to play. It's our aspiration, our desire to grow spiritually is an intimate, integral part of this law. And it takes place in the mind. By the way, I've overlooked mentioning this in my preliminaries, but the Four of Pentacles in the position of the real question is a card that showed up two sessions ago. Not last time, but the time before. None of these cards appeared last time, but two times ago, two laws ago. The Four of Pentacles did as the hidden forces. So just to keep you apprised of those things. We go on then to the counterpoint. And we have the King of Cups. The King, of course, represents mastery. And he has this big cup and he's sitting on the throne. There's divine force. There's little decorations behind the throne indicate incoming divine force for self-expression. And he's got his hand on the cup. Now, this is really has nothing to do with emotions, except to the degree that we can't begin to understand this law in any way, shape, or form until we achieve mastery of the emotions. This will be reiterated with the Six of Rods. But we need to be in a perfect position to respond. The law is the law of expansive response. So as long as we're reactive emotionally or trapped in our physical, you know, looking for all the gusto we can grab, as long as we're trapped in that pettiness and silliness, we can't understand this law. This law has to do with our conscious expansion of mental skills, not with reactiveness. So this brings up the whole question of what does it mean to obey the law? Well, it doesn't mean that you repress your urges or you depress any part of your system. It means that you learn to incorporate the divine patterns of life into our own life. We learn to act with joy instead of sorrow. We learn to act with peace instead of turmoil. We learn to act with harmony instead of discord. And that's what is required of the King of Cups, that kind of mastery, so that our expression in life is always of divine force, not personal reactiveness. Personal reactiveness trips us up every single time. If we get, if we become irritated, which is very common in Virgo because our sensitivity is heightened, if we become impatient, if we become dour and grim, we violate this law. We're supposed to be expanding our response to law, not contracting into irritability and rejecting life as it is. So it's very important to learn to set a pace that is in harmony with the divine rhythm. So this is a card that talks to our obedience, our capacity to submit to divine authority, knowing that the laws of life reveal to us divine authority, the power of the divine will. And it's not up to us to subvert that divine will. It's up to us to learn to express that divine will in what we do. In other words, to act with joy in spite of what's happening around us, to act with harmony in spite of the discord around us, to act with poise and order in spite of the fact that we feel like we're in chaos. And this is the way we dominate the physical and emotional planes. Do you have a question?
Well, I'm wondering, then, would you say, is this reading going to show us how to develop and refine our response mechanism?
Right.
This would be like a step-by-step
right
way to do that?
Well, if it comes out well, it will. I don't know whether I can cover every single step, but I'm going to cover a lot of them. Okay. And it's up to you then to fill in the missing steps if there are any. But that's a good question. Thank you. The point I'm getting at here is that the laws of divine life affirm God's wisdom. They are not prohibitions. We have this concept, thou shalt not kill, and or thou shalt not steal, or thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ass. And we get all hung up on this. And then we try to repress ourselves. We try to bottle ourselves up, and this is unhealthy to us. And it's not an expression of divine law. It's the law of expressive response, not the law of...
expansive
response. Well, expansive, expressive, they both work. It's not the law of frustrating yourself. It's not the law of self-flagellation. It's not the law of wearing a hair shirt. It's the law of expansive response. So we need to keep this in mind. The mind is meant to expand. If you remember the basic course, I told you I had no interest and no ability to teach your brain how to become bigger, but I can teach you how to expand the mind and enrich the mind and through that enrich life on earth. So that's what we're about here. We're harnessing divine will, not as a threat to ourselves, not as a force of repression or abstention or asceticism, but as a triumphant, victorious expression of everything holy and sacred. And that leads us to the Six of Rods, the challenge. We have a woman, apparently in pink, riding a well-harnessed horse, carrying a rod with a laurel wreath of triumph on the top of it. And of course, this embodies the idea of the mind rules. We dominate, we use the mind to discipline and overcome reactiveness, irritability, indecisiveness, and immersion in matter. We understand that we have a noble part of our being and then a less than noble part of our being. And we must embrace that, but it's the noble part that controls the ignoble part. Rose and I were watching an old Star Trek show last night, and in this, the beam-me-up transporter developed a glitch, and in transporting Kirk back from a planet back up to the Enterprise, he split into half. And part of it was his noble half, and part of it was his less than noble half. But the less than noble half took all of the leadership skills, assertiveness, aggressiveness, willingness to take risks. In other words, all the testosterone ended up in the ignoble half. And Kirk ended up just a wimp that was becoming more and more passive, indecisive, unable to control himself or make up his mind or exercise authority. And in the end, he had to basically knock out the ignoble self and take it back. And after they fixed the transporter, he stood there to be beamed back down to the planet and then beamed right back up. But he was embracing the ignoble Kirk. And they got beamed back out and then beamed back in. And he had used his mind to reintegrate himself as one. And it was a marvelous show. And the settings are 1970-ish. But the script was a brilliant script. And Spock told Kirk, you know, look, I'm half alien and half human. And I have a war between those two parts of me every single day of my life. But I have a mind that is strong enough to control that conflict. Well, in a nutshell, that is human life right there. We have a noble part and a less than noble part. And that doesn't mean that we should ever give in to the less than noble part. We use the nobility within us, following divine law, to conquer and transform the ignoble on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, if we need to do that. And this, by the way, is how we redeem life on earth. We don't redeem life on earth by taking out the trash after dinner. That's a useful activity, but because who wants to live with a mountain of trash in their kitchen? But we redeem life on earth by changing our character, by taking the trash out that exists within ourselves. As the Christ told us, there are wolves in sheep clothing, and you judge a tree by its fruit, and if the tree bears corrupted fruit, you cut the tree down and you throw it on the fire and burn it up. That's the process of redemption. That's the process of transformation. As you discover within yourself an emotional reaction that you don't like, and you've probably run into several of those here in Virgo, because that's what Virgo is all about, purification. You are meant to take it into your mental room, use the emotional energy mirror and the Q-ray, and you burn it in transforming that pattern into something more noble. You use the love and the joy and the harmony and the beauty of the soul to transform the less than noble. And so that's what we're doing here. The Six of Rods is our capacity not to ride a horse, but to hop a ride on the dog train or the God train of these laws and learn to control the laws so that we can express them in our life. And the process of following these laws leads to human freedom. The process of ignoring them or scoffing at them or rejecting them leads to ongoing enslavement. So this is the preeminent law of thinking. It's the mind that liberates. It's the mind that frees us from the past chains of our enslavement. Enslavement to emotion, enslavement to materialism. All right, then we come down to the star. This is the purpose and the position of purpose. And the star is in the major arcana. It's number 17. It is a glorious star shining in the firmament of the sky. And directly underneath it is a peacock reproducing all the same colors. But look at the swirl of energy as the peacock is rising up toward the star and drawing the energies of the earth right out of the ground and creating this arch up to the star. This is the response. This is resonance. And so the peacock, the phoenix or whatever, the bird is our personality, designed to elevate itself to the star, to the soul. And that's what draws us up towards the divine. So this is the expanding response. You can feel the upsurge of energy as the phoenix or the peacock, whatever it is, rises up towards its soul, just as we rise up to our soul. The top half of this card is heaven, the bottom half is earth. Heaven is the equivalent of divine law. Earth is where obedience attunes us to that law. Not submission, but obedience, learning to live lawfully. And I think a perfect excerpt defining this whole discussion tonight, this law of expansive response, comes from the end of the essay on man, Pope. You have all heard this before, but listen to it in the context of what we've been talking about tonight. God loves from whole to parts, but human soul must rise from individual to the whole. That's what the star is doing here. Self-love but serves the virtuous mind to wake as the self-pebble, as the small pebble stirs the peaceful lake. The center moved, a circle straight succeeds, another still and still another spreads. Friend, parent, neighbor, first it will embrace, his country next and next all human race. Wide and more wide, the overflowings of the mind take every creature in of every kind. Earth smiles around with boundless beauty, boundless bounty blessed, and heaven beholds its image in its breast. So that's the principle of expansive response. We self-love serves the virtuous mind awake, like a small pebble dropped into a lake. The center moves, and then a circle, and another circle, and another circle. And in that way, we expand out to embrace the entirety, embrace the whole. God already embraces the whole, being omnipresent, but we learn to do it through the mind. Okay, then we come to the hangman. The hangman, as you know, number 12 in the major arcana, he's hanging, suspended by a rope around his foot from the cross of life. And all the energies are flowing downward, down toward the head, which is at the bottom. And this card always refers to the need to reverse our priorities, to stop thinking in terms of the physical body and the emotions first and foremost, and to start giving more and more importance to spirit and especially the will. And this card indicates perfect obedience or submission because it takes a tremendous trust and faith in divine will to hang there suspended upside down, connected only by one thin cord from the soul. But as the flowering crossbar indicates, this is the process of growth. So as we reverse our priorities and start to ask, how does the soul What's the soul trying to accomplish in this situation? And what embraces the larger picture? Then we develop the skills that lead to the activation of this law. It's very important to understand that the average person cannot comprehend this law of expansive response. The average person believes in miracles, accepts the... if I talk to them about it, I say, well, all I do is pray. I pray that God will deliver me from my problems. And, of course, it would be cruel to say, and how often does that work? See? God's not going to suspend divine law for any individual, no matter how good you are at prayer. God can help you understand how to move elements around in your life so that the healing occurs or the improvement occurs, but God never suspends divine law for anyone's benefit because the whole of creation would cease that moment.
Well, a miracle is the fulfilling of the law, though.
A miracle is absolutely the fulfilling of the law. Christ legitimately walked across the Sea of Galilee because he knew how to calm the sea. He was in control. He was in mastery. He knew how to handle, well, it's like Padre Pio. Mm-hmm. He was seen levitating by hundreds of people on more than one occasion at the monastery. I was going to say the convent, but that's that's the border.
Something else.
God was not lifting him up and breaking his laws. Padre Pio understood that the law of gravity should really be the law of aerodynamics or whatever you want to call it, that allowed him to do that. And it's the mind that reveals the inner potential of these laws. It's the mind that at some point says, well, you know, now that you understand this, you can walk on water. But don't try it at home. Don't try it. Well, you can try it in your bathtub, but don't try it until you get that little small whisper of intuition saying, now you know. Humanity has to expand in order to embrace that response. So the meaning of the hanged man here is that we have an ability to respond to spirit, and the greater our response and the greater our integration of divine will into our life, the more we are given the keys to understanding the genuine laws that run life. Not what human beings think, not what the world of materialism and reactiveness would tell us. And to me, the great example of this is the way most people interpret the episode of Jesus overturning the money-changing tables in the temple. And most people say, well, you see, Jesus was angry. No, it never says that. It never describes him as angry. It describes him as righteous and ready to act with divine authority to redeem this imposition on the temple. And that's a completely different thing. He did not lose his cool. He expressed divine law. Now, one of the other elements here about the hanged man is that this hanged man demonstrates, on the other side of the coin, our capacity to screw things up, our capacity to pervert divine law. It's as real as our capacity to reverse priorities. And that is that many people think that the way to interact with divine law is to redefine it whatever way suits them. And in the process of doing that, they pervert divine law. Now, it's no big loss. God doesn't cry in heaven. The point is that it's the person who perverts the law that gets trapped in the perversion. But what this means is we need to establish a harmony and a balance between our understanding of law and our expression of it on earth. If we try to deal with our physical appetites of hunger and thirst and sex and the need for money, by indulging it, we'll run amok. If we try to deal with it by repressing those urges, we'll also run amok. That's the pairs of opposites. What we need to do is harmonize and understand that the part of us that is noble is designed to control the part of us that is not. And it's as simple as that. All right, so that's the past. That's our endowment. We've gone through many experiences, and we probably had 20, 30 lifetimes during Atlantis in which we overindulged in our physical appetites. And so now we get to practice a little restraint so that we can balance these things out. Now we go to the future, the Eight of Rods, and we have this abstract image of eight forces of wisdom, of thought energy, moving in parallel across the heavens. And so, again, this is what suggests to us we have the capacity, as we open the, as we train the mind, first the lower mind and then the higher mind, we have the capacity to identify with and fill ourselves with these archetypal forces, the forces of light, the forces of joy, the forces of peace, the forces of tolerance and forgiveness. And these, there's a very simple principle here, and that is that love defeats hate. Joy transforms grimness. Light casts out the darkness, erases the darkness, eliminates it. Strength eliminates weakness and passivity. And so on and so on and so on. This is the dynamic principle of the greater meets the lesser and remains the greater. Transforms the lesser and lifts it up, just as we see the star. That's the meaning of the law of expansive response. If the law were static rules and the mind was a static mechanism, we would never grow. We would never be able to understand. I mean, if we had a bad habit, we'd have a bad habit forever because we would have no mechanism for transforming. But we're designed under divine law to confront the demons within our subconscious and the devils within our character and defeat them, transform them, merge with them like Kirk did with his the duplicate image of himself. And so we are expressing the law. We find freedom by expressing the law. Okay, any comments or questions at this point? We've completed the cross that defines this. Any questions or comments before I move on? All right, well, now we come to where the pedal meets the metal, or the metal meets the pedal, or whatever.
The rubber meets the road.
There's the cliche. Okay. We come to the real question, which is the Four of Pentacles, upside down. And the Four of Pentacles could be thought of as the perfectly balanced, well-tempered spiritual aspirin. Everything's in balance. Even the background, which is mass consciousness, there's as much on the left as there is on the right. He's right in the middle, and he's got his head chakras open up and the heart, and then his two hands, everything in symmetry. So this is the well-tuned aspirant focused in the mind, even though it's pentacles. He has balanced the physical body, the emotions, the whole personality. And so the real question is, what best empowers our acts? How do we practice the presence of God in this situation? And we call on a divine law to illuminate us. And then we use the divine force attached to that divine law to transform. If we're at odds with another person, we bring in tolerance and forgiveness. If we're in conflict with another person, we bring in harmony. If we've encountered grimness, we bring in beauty, and so on. But the solution lies in the crown chakra, the mind, not in what our hands do. We use our hands to express it, but the solution lies in spirit. Now, Rose asked me for some steps earlier on. I happen to have here a list of questions that we should be asking. This is from DK, from A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, for those of you who enjoy reading that.
What page is that?
Oh, 567.
567.
And these are the questions to be asked, the real questions about this law of expansive response. In what type of matter do I usually formulate thoughts? Are my thoughts formulated by my reactions to physical life? Are they dominated by my emotional reactiveness and responsiveness? Or am I contemplating archetypal ideals? Am I harnessing the spiritual will? What is the substance I'm working with as I create thought forms and thoughts? Is it thought matter that lifts people up as they encounter these thoughts? Or does it drag people down as they encounter thoughts? Does it elevate my level of awareness, or does it depress my level of awareness? And do you even have any idea what quality of energy you're shaping your thought forms out of? That's question number one. Question number two, what is the quality of my thought forms? Do they enrich and heal the life around me, or do they create stumbling blocks for me and other people? Am I a source of inspiration to other people, or am I just a pain in the ass? What's the quality of my thought forms? Do they have any strength? Do they have any power in them? Do my thoughts draw people to me, or do I repel people? In other words, what's the body odor content of my thoughts? With what purpose do I use mental matter? Am I trying to express spiritual will? Am I trying to embody a law of life? Or am I just reacting, maybe a little less violently than some other people, but still I'm just reacting to what life is? Do I start each day with a plan for what I want to achieve, or do I just go with the flow? Am I in control, or am I a reactive person? Do I work in mental matter consciously or unconsciously? Do I have any idea how I shape my thought forms? Do I have any idea what thought forms are hanging around me right at this moment? Do I go through the day like Joe Blistic, with a rain cloud over my head? That's from the LCAP Little Abner series. Or do I go through life planting seeds of courage and grace? And of course, we'll be talking about that in a few weeks with the graces. Am I able to vitalize my thoughts with a high or a low order of quality of mental energy? In other words, as I create a thought, am I animating it with my appetites, my urges, with my desires, my emotions, or with spiritual will? Do I even understand how to animate my thoughts? Do I realize the power of the will to vitalize? Do I have any contact with the will to vivify and vitalize my plans and my ideas? Do I destroy thought forms when they have accomplished their purpose by a conscious act of the will? If you let a negative thought go through your head, do you know how to call it back and destroy it? And to the question, Do you know how to, when you've used a thought form and it's over and done with, do you know how to destroy the thought form so that it doesn't continue to act and behave outside of your conscious direction? As an example, let's say you've been married, you get a divorce, or your spouse dies, or you get a separation. Do you know how to disentangle yourself from all those energies, or do you just continue to work with old grudges and old patterns of thought, which get less and less powerful, but still remain in your subconscious? Do I make forms which bring karmic reactions, or do I build thought forms which empower the good of the group? And so, in other words, am I focused in my self-interest, or like the rippling outward pond, am I interested in doing what's best for everyone concerned? Am I going to vote this November on my selfish interests or for the good of the country? Am I responding to the spirit of America or to the demands of my party? That would be a practical example of that. So those are 9 steps of learning to think carefully, where you gain control over the thought energy you use. Ultimately, the message behind this card, the Four of Pentacles, is balance. The mind is a tremendous vehicle for establishing equilibrium. In order to exercise spiritual will effectively and think creatively, we have to be able to reconcile duality. We have to be able to harness the pairs of opposites in everything we deal with, so that we're always working from the apex, never from one end of the baseline or the other. Now, that's not a new idea. It's the heart of all that I teach about the mind and developing the mind. But in that one little symbol of working from the apex to harmonize the opposite extremes, we learn the principle of the law of expansive response. We focus in the apex, not in the pairs of opposites. We then go on here to the Two of Rods. This is the unseen factor. And the fellow here is holding a globe of wholeness, and on either side is a rod. Once again, we deal with the pairs of opposites. But the unseen force is wholeness. In order to harness the will of God, you have to be able to embrace the whole. You cannot activate the will of God or the laws of life in order to apply it to one side of the duality or another. You have to deal with the wholeness. And so again, the idea of God loves from, man must rise from individual to the whole, comes back and is very powerful here. The law is the will of divine life. And it's the effect of intelligent activity as it works with matter. Our goal here is to see how these laws of divine life are the laws of creation that govern the development of the mind. As we expand our mind, we learn the lessons of following the law, of harnessing divine authority. This brings us to spiritual ideal. We've been here once before. This is the Hierophant, number 5 in the major arcana. As I described him earlier, he's got this blue-gray cloak on, and as he's got all that pattern of the residue of ancient evil down at the base, as we saw in the star, and of course implied in the page of rods coming out of the muck. So this is clearly this is the law that gives us the keys to exploring the mind of God. not just our human mind, and not just for thinking. Thinking is the process by which we observe law. Then we must identify with the laws, follow them where they go, into the future, back into the past, and then we must harness them, activate them, and express these laws in our own life. And as we saw with the Four of Pentacles, that means we internalize our interaction with life within ourselves. We don't go out it reminds me of the book of Jonah, where he goes to tell the city of Nineveh on God's instructions that it's an evil, wicked city, and if they don't give up their evil ways, God will destroy it. And he camps outside of the walls of Nineveh for a month, and then God decides that enough people have prayed to warrant saving the city, and he says, well, I've decided to spare Nineveh. And Jonah gets rather testy about this and says, I've camped out here for a whole month telling these people that their city's going to be destroyed, and now you're going to let them go on. I want to see some fireworks. I want some death and destruction here. Otherwise, I'll look like a fool. Well, you see, the problem was, the message has to begin inside. He needed to be doing some transformation himself, specifically in terms of his rather ignoble desire to see Nineveh wiped off the face of the earth. He needed to express more love and capacity and generosity to these people. So this is what the Hierophant always reveals. And as I indicated before, the question of this reading is, are we behaving lawfully or unlawfully? Are we behaving nobly or ignobly? And that's the question each of us has to ask ourselves every day and every hour of the day as we go through life. Because we can be going along very, very placidly, and then all of a sudden our own reactiveness rises up within ourselves and dominates us for a split second, and our nobility goes out the window. So we always have to be on the lookout here, but we need to adopt that attitude of blessing. We're here to enrich life on earth, not to punish it, not to impose retribution. Then we come to our conclusion, and we have the Five of Pentacles, which is the symbol of the church window with the choir of the organ in the background, all the pentacles up there, and the two pilgrims, male and female, walking along the path of pilgrimage without a clue that these laws are there to help them. The average person goes through their human life wondering, what's the meaning of it all? Where's the purpose? And they don't have a clue. They don't elevate their eyes to see the splendid laws of beauty and glory and grace and whatnot just above their heads. All they have to do is develop the mind with the eyes to see and the ears to hear, and they'll suddenly perceive all this. One of the projects I do down here is a book called The Enchantment of North Georgia, and I'm just in the process of finishing a revision of this. It's about all the local spots. And in this one, I'm including major articles about Gibbs Garden that I wrote about half a year ago when it first opened. And one of the things that I talk about is I did an interview with Jim Gibbs, who designed this, caused it to grow after 30 years. This is a world-class botanical gardens right here just a few minutes south of us. And I asked him what he, many questions about his garden, but he says, the purpose of this garden is to bring pleasure so that people can come here, and as they walk through the gardens, they forget about their cares and their worries and whatnot, and they discover the tranquility and the peace of God. And he used the word God. He's apparently not a Democrat. But he used it many times, that through nature, through the combination of his creativity and the growth of nature, his goal is constantly to reveal the presence of the divine, which is something that you don't get in the cities too often. And he said, I asked him, well, do you get any, when people were done, do you get any negative comments? He says, almost never, because they're so swept away by the tranquility and the peace and the beauty of the gardens that by the time they've walked around for an hour or two and are leaving, they've been transformed. Well, this is what we're meant to do here in this Garden of Earth. We are, each one of us has the capacity to tap the laws of life and to bring them down into our own personal pilgrimage, reconcile the dualities, use them to reconcile the dualities and reveal the divine purpose behind this seeming conflict. So again, to quote the essay on man, I wasn't prepared for this, but it seems reasonable. We must cease nor order imperfection name. We must be secure to be as blessed as we can bear, safe in the hand of one disposing power, either in the natal or the mortal hour. All nature is but art, unknown to thee, all chance direction which thou canst not see, all discord harmony not understood, all partial evil universal good, and spite of pride and erring reason's spite, one truth is clear, whatever is right. That sums up the law of expansive response. Those members of humanity who are able to grow in their understanding of law, the divine law, have trained their mind in a proper way to fill themselves and express the light, the love, the beauty, the order of divine life in all that they do. Okay, I'm going to stop there. I'm going to cease my commentary and entertain comments and questions. Comments and questions.
Carl, I think I was just thinking that sometimes things that we deal with day in and day out just seem so nonsensical, at least to me. And I guess talking about, and you just sit and I can't help getting caught up in it, so I will have an emotional reaction. I try to catch myself, and I think, again, the triangle thinking, you know, it gives you a chance to step away and see the emotional reaction on one end and at least have that moment to look at it and say, okay, you know, that's where I am right now.
Well, that's the purpose of meditation.
Why is that? Yeah.
That's the purpose of meditation, that at the end of your busy day, or maybe right during the middle of it, if you have a chance, but at some point you step back, you detach yourself, and then you review things that tripped you up, and you say, how could I have responded to that according to divine law, rather than according to my emotional immaturity? And then you practice that. You rehearse how you could have behaved, and the next time you're better prepared to do that. That, in the nutshell, is the essence of the law of expansive response. We're responding our responsiveness to divine patterns, divine laws. And we should never fall for the illusion that, that's up there and I'm down here. No, the energies that are the divine laws of creation are living, moving streams of energy filled with spiritual will that are constantly circulating through the mind of God. So whether you're at school, surrounded by six or seven little kids or more, or if you are in the supermarket or driving down the superhighway, or whatever, you these divine energies of life, these laws, are right there with you. They're constantly available. The resource, you know, because of the hanged man, we're tied to these things. We strengthen that as we strengthen the Anacharana. We strengthen our connection, but we are tied and connected to these as we consciously learn to name them and recognize them. And we become a conduit for expressing these in our life. So we, instead of getting the whip out and self-flagellating ourselves when we, oh my God, I had an emotional reaction, we should take the more sensible approach of, oh, all right, my emotional reaction got the better of me. I can now get the better of it. I can bring it into my mental room. I can rehearse it, and I can contact the patience of the divine energy of patience, the divine energy of cause and effect, the divine energy of abundance, the divine energy of forgiveness, whatever it is. I can contact the law, harness the will, and use it to transform this negative expression into a positive one. That's it in a nutshell. So never be annoyed by that. Right now we're in the middle of Virgo. Everybody should be celebrating the fact that Virgo exposes their irritability. It really bothers the hell out of me, I can tell you that. Now, the point is that unless our irritability was exposed once a year, or more often, we wouldn't have a clue what to transform. So this is not a backsliding. It's not an, oh, no, not this again. It's a cause for celebration. It's a cause for triumph. It's a cause for the Six of Rods. Saddle your pony and ride. Get on the dog train. I mean, the God train. Other comments? Questions?
Carl, I liked your analogy about the God train, and I could just see that and the swirling energies. And it's so easy for us to, you know, through maybe the reactiveness or disappointment or whatever, to not be in flow and to get out of sync with that or fall off a little bit. But then that reevaluation, just what you're saying, invoking the ideal, reaching for that energy again, I mean, it does swirl around. And when you get back with it and it's carrying you, I think that you just bring others with you. And, you know, you can get that sense of being raised up and in sync with it and flowing. And you can't help but reach out to the rest of humanity that you're contacting that day, and they get that. They get that flow of energy along with you. It's really quite wonderful.
Right. Good. Other comments or questions?
With the you say expansive response.
Expansive response.
So is that another way of thinking about that is how the soul would respond to constantly ask yourself, how would the soul respond in this?
Well, you can certainly ask how the soul would respond, and that's a very good way of approaching it. But the meaning of expansive response is, what's my next step forward in growth? How am I growing by learning to respond more to the divine law? Because that growth is what is the expansive response. Okay. You don't want a contracting response,
obviously,
a shrinking response. Well, a lot of people go through life that way. They focus more and more on their selfish, self-centered things. And as they get older, they get narrower and narrower, and they shrink into a black hole. Anybody else?
Carl, just that I really like the image of the dogs sticking their heads out the windows of the trains,
sure,
being very happy. And
well, when I send out the podcast on this, maybe I can send out the dog train song,
the artwork.
Well, maybe the artwork, but maybe the song,
the song
too. If I don't know whether I'll be able to copy it or not, but if I can, I will. if I remember.
Or buy the book.
It's right.
The CD.
If I can't send it out, you all should go out and buy the dog. It's the title of the, isn't it? Yes. The title of the album is Dog Train.
It's a book and a CD.
Yeah. It's a...
yeah, it's called Dog Train.
Right.
And
Boynton. Boynton.
And I've always loved those cartoons. I've never heard of this.
Oh, yeah. This is
I think you did it for Walden also one time, but I somehow must have missed the story about
it. I thought of it spontaneously.
Yeah.
I wasn't. This is... Dog Train is the Midnight Express, a wild ride on the rock and roll side. And it...
this is the picture.
Right. I'll send some pictures, if not the song. It's
just wonderful.
Yeah. The words go like this. Along about midnight when it's dark, 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 there's a long, 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 low whistle and a faraway bark. And then a high, high whistle only hounds can hear to let them know the train, the dog train's near. Dog train riding all night long. On that dog train, they'll be riding till dawn. You'll never ever see it as it rockets past. The train goes nowhere, but it goes there fast. Dog trade. And that's the kind of image that you need here, except God train, that the laws of life may seem to go nowhere, but they go there fast, and you need to hop on and see what life's all about. Okay, very good. That's it for tonight. I thank everybody, and we'll do this again in a couple of weeks with another law, and see you then. Good night. Thanks.